Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 6-12 and the Cubs win. Hell no place to go. Oh, you didn't know that? You just woke up? Hell no place to go. Oh, you did know that. You stayed up. No. Why are you yelling? You're cranky because you're tired? Stop yelling. Goodbye, baby. So I'm confused now, Dave. Yesterday I guaranteed a Cubs win and the Cubs won. Normally if I guarantee something, it goes in the other direction.
I know that. So whatever you did, though, worked, so you have to do it again.
It involved a tribal dance of sorts, mm-hmm. Some potions, some voodoo.
Is that what you were doing over there in the corner?
Tribal voodoo.
Yeah.
You know, well, actually, late in the show, you said they would lose.
I did.
So that's why they won. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually do think it was the reverse thing.
I said they'd lose?
Yeah. Like, late in the show.
So I said both yesterday, so I was covered in either direction.
The last one is probably what counted.
I think what we determined was the day before you had... Whichever way you predicted, it didn't work.
Yes.
So I honestly, Steve, I don't remember what you said.
The day before when they lost, yes. I guaranteed they would lose. Therefore, I thought they would win.
Yeah, but it turned out you were right. So yesterday you guaranteed they would win, and they won.
But then Steve's saying, and he could be right because I rarely listen to this show, that late in the show I said they would lose. Yeah. And in fact, they won.
You were doing some reverse psychology, is what it was.
Here's my statement.
Maybe I should just shut the hell up.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever you did, do it again today. Yeah, do it again today.
Just say it's going to be a tie.
A tie. no ties in baseball.
Yeah.
Nick's coming up in just a second. Let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Item number one, the death of four Green Beret in Niger continues to be a mystery. We've got mysteries galore, kids. We don't know why a lunatic shot Las Vegas up and killed nearly 60 and injured nearly 500. But on the other side of the world, we don't know why we had four Green Beret in Niger, even though all of North Africa is a hot political mess. And we don't know why one was left behind. It took 2 days to extract the body of Green Beret Johnson. And yesterday, the mess that Trump created in his phone call to the widow, the widow's mother-in-law and friend and congresswoman in the car, that was one of the major stories yesterday. That all is part and parcel to this story. Why were we there? What happened? Why hasn't the Pentagon said more? Why is there in full investigation now? Why didn't the president say more before? All of these questions need to be answered. Next. Mayor Emanuel released the 2018 budget, raises taxes for the sixth time in 7 years. Why? Because you got to pay for stuff. Now, you can blame Emanuel. You could blame Mayor Daley. You could blame everybody all the way back. But what's blame going to get you? Figure it out.
I agree.
You got to pay for stuff.
What he's proposing isn't completely outlandish. You know, when you say Uber and Lyft are going to increase, it's 15 cents. 911 calls are going to go up by, now they're going to be $1.10 a month more. And then there's a fee also on, there was another fee as well that he popped in there too. Oh, on entertainment taxes. So if you go to a concert and say it's $5, maybe now it'll be $7, depending on the venue.
If you stay home, do you get a rebate?
No. No.
Actually, Chris Anitz would kill if that were the case.
Man, I tell you.
He hangs out with his dog. Imagine the money you would make.
I'd make out like a bandit.
Next. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration has outlined more than $200 million in cuts officials say are necessary to help balance the budget lawmakers put in place over his veto, including reductions in areas he's historically supported, like manufacturing and tourism and agriculture. He'll be on this morning at 7:10, and we'll talk about the budget. Since 2006, most online political activity has been exempt from a bunch of regulations. You know, these paid political advertisements on television, radio, and print that you've had to have regulated for years. Today, a bipartisan bill to be introduced in the Senate will force Facebook, Google, and other companies to disclose who's buying online political advertising. And the proposal follows those revelations that Russian bots and Russian-linked propaganda helped determine the outcome of the election last year. This is a good law. This is Congress doing their job. Next. Ben Sasse, a junior United States senator from Nebraska, apologized during the Jeff Sessions hearing. Sorry about the drama on this side of the aisle. I dumped Dr. Pepper on Ted Cruz, and that's what we're dealing with over here. It was a needed moment, but there is a question if there was a second Dr. Pepper behind the grassy knoll, because there is a thought that Sasse may have done what others have thought about. Take one for the team. Dump Dr. Pepper on Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, the least liked member of Congress in either party. Who doesn't want to dump a Dr. Pepper on Ted Cruz? Meanwhile, the Jeff Sessions hearing yesterday went pretty much as you would expect. And finally, the Dow closed over 23,000 for the first time yesterday. Congratulations, you're all rich. It's 6:18. Mary's here. She has traffic, and then we'll come back with Nick.
What to see, what's out at the show. I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Gian's Cochrane show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night. DiGiulio, he knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Oh, let's find out what he's thinking.
I need to know what Nick is
6:21, Nick DiGiulio, judges. Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. Hawks had a bad night, but they were due. You know, you can't win them all, even though I'd like you to.
True.
So Dave, the record is
4-2-1.
4-2-1. So then I've got them on the year at 79-2-1.
79.
Yes.
Yeah. That's it.
That's where I've got them right now.
Mm-hmm. I think that's realistic.
Realistic and expected. I mean, I don't want to raise the bar too high, but hello.
Yeah.
Nice moment with Eddie Olczyk last night.
I was just going to say, by the way, it was great to hear Eddie.
Yeah, and to see him and Doc together. And Doc, Doc is, you know, it's just a play. You can hear Doc call a loss. Mm-hmm. You feel better even about a loss when you hear Doc Emmerich.
You do.
He's such a pro.
He's the best. He'll be on tomorrow.
And they put Eddie on the video board at Scott Trade Center during.
Got a huge ovation.
I mean, it was great. Yeah. A really nice move by the Blues.
Yeah, and hockey fans get it.
They understand.
Yeah. The other thing is, in the Cubs game that we haven't talked about, and we don't have time to really address it here, but there was a call last night made in the game. And you almost never, home teams almost never show controversial calls on the video board because riots could ensue.
Well, they didn't used to, but they do now.
Everybody?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I think those rules have gone out the window as far as showing controversial. Once they brought replay into the game, they show stuff.
Yeah, but we don't get to see the replay if you're in the park. I still think it's a bad idea. Having said that, it's one of the worst calls I've seen in ever. The guy standing behind home plate has to make the call on whether or not it was a foul tip, not the guy 90 feet away.
Right.
Right.
It's crazy.
You know, did you hear a Madden's press conference after the game?
No.
He said, and you can find the audio. I played it on my show. He said that, you know, somebody, obviously they asked him about the call and how he felt about it. And he didn't rag on the umpires or anything. He said it was a bad call. It was a really terrible call. And it was a mistake. Something has to be done. He goes, and I'll tell you something. If Granderson would have hit a home run on the next pitch, I would have ran out on the field in my jock strap.
The process was horrible to have that change. And if Granderson hits the next pitch out, you know, I might come running out of the clubhouse, you know, my jock strap. I mean, that was like.
It's not an image we need.
Well, it would have been entertaining.
I'm a very visual person. I don't need that.
Would have been a cubby occurrence.
Yeah.
And that's normally the way it works. You get hosed on a call, and the guy that benefits from the hosing usually does hurt you more. So it didn't go that way last night.
It did not.
And the Cubs tonight. All right, movie time. The Snowman. This is Michael Fassbender's new movie. Do I need to see this?
Yeah. I haven't seen it. I hear mixed things about it, but man, I mean. A lot of people are looking forward to this. Evidently, the book is a massively popular mystery, and it's a murder mystery. He plays a detective who's trying to capture this serial killer who's killing women called the Snowman Killer, and he only kills during the winter, during the snowfall in winter. And it's a good cast. You got Michael Fassbender, James Darcy, Rebecca Ferguson, J.K. Simmons, Val Kilmer, who we haven't seen in a long time. And I hear pretty good things about it. And I like Michael Fassbender. I like a good, scary thriller. So
I love J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, me too. He's amazing.
I like J.K. Simmons insurance commercials. I watch him do anything.
That's exactly.
Only the brave. Who was it? You and I yesterday, Andrea, the day before, talking about how Miles Teller gets an awful lot of hype, and we're not sure he's the guy.
Yeah, I agree. I loved him in Whiplash, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. He doesn't knock me out either. Anyway, Josh Brolin, Taylor Kitsch, Miles Teller, Jeff Bridges, Jennifer Connelly, Andy McDowell. It's a big movie. Only the brave.
It's going to be interesting to see.
I mean, it's coming out at a terrible time, considering the subject matter.
Well, not only that, but it's the movie that's next on our list. I'm interested to see how Only the Brave does, particularly in the box office in Northern California.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see how Geostorm does in Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico. Like, who would want to go and see that after going through all these horrible natural disasters, and on the same day these movies are coming out? So it's going to be interesting to see what the box office looks like.
Yeah, and the Geostorm movie with Gerard Butler and Ed Harris is about controlling the world's global climate. And as we know, the only one that can do that is Tom Skilling. What is Breathe?
Breathe is a true story about a guy who contracted polio years ago. And he was confined to a bed. He was only given months to live. And he ended up living longer. And he invented a breathing device and wheelchairs that worked without having to use hands or anything like that. And it is it's about, you know, the beginning of helping disabled people. The really interesting, Andrew Garfield is the lead. Claire Foy is the female lead. They're both terrific actors. The really interesting thing is that Andy Serkis directed this movie. And Andy Serkis is, you know, the actor who was in all the stop motion stuff. He was Gollum in Lord of the Rings. He's Caesar in the War of the Planet of the Apes movies. Mm-hmm. And this is his first movie as a director. And I hear really, really good things about it. And, you know, Andrew Garfield got nominated for Best Actor last year. And people are saying that he'd probably get nominated for this, too.
Goodbye, Christopher Robin. Look, Winnie the Pooh, is this a kid movie?
No, it's an adult movie. It's about the writing of the Pooh books and how the writer was inspired by his son, Christopher Robin. And it's about the effect, you know, the writing of the books, the effect that the books had on his family and on the real Christopher Robin, and how it became a phenomenon. So it's about the creation of the character, which is not unlike the movie that came out last week, which was about the author who created Wonder Woman. And this is like a second movie in a week in a row where you get to see the inspiration for some classic characters in literature. So
Margot Robbie's in that movie. And yeah. Tyler Perry's Boo 2, A Madea Halloween. Well, at least now I know what I'm going to do.
You got your weekend plans now?
Okay, enough of that. This Harvey Weinstein thing continues to blow up all over. He is nothing short of an animal, and even all the rumors that you had heard and I had heard and through the 90s and the 2000s, it just gets worse and worse every day.
It's unbelievable. And again, here's the sad part. I mean, you know, like all of the women who have come out and all the accusations that are happening, they're disgusting and they're horrendous and they're horrible. But I got to say, and this is really sad, I'm not that surprised. You know, hearing the stories about the behavior of Harvey Weinstein over the years and how he's dealt with people and the rumors and the jokes that have been made about this, you know, like a bunch of years ago, Tina Fey wrote a couple of jokes in 30 Rock that were Harvey Weinstein jokes.
Well, that's the thing. I love, you know, I love Tina Fey. I love Matt Damon. I love, you know, but sometimes you get a wake up call. The people that you see on screen are human beings and they have flaws and all that. And we don't know about them. This guy is beyond flawed. This guy is a sick, perverted, demented piece of garbage. But in the meantime, when Brad Pitt finds out that Gwyneth Paltrow, his girlfriend at the time, is been assaulted by this guy, and then hears the rumors and knows the stories through the years, how do you keep making movies with him? How do these people? Look, I know he made money. I know he got trophies. I know he was good for maybe getting you an Oscar. But how do you look at yourself in the mirror when you know he's doing this to women?
I want to suggest to you that if you've not read it, maybe you have already, but there's a screenwriter named Scott Rosenberg is his name. Scott Rosenberg. He wrote Beautiful Girls, the really terrific film from the mid-90s for Miramax. He also wrote Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead for Miramax. And he wrote this incredible piece that's online right now, Scott Rosenberg's sort of like confession that he knew, you know what I mean? And but, you know, the money train was flying in. Harvey Weinstein was buying him all kinds of things. He was complicit. There's no question about it. But it's a really, really interesting and sort of devastating piece that this screenwriter wrote about it, admitting that he feels awful, that this is he's not looking for excuses. But everybody who knew about, and then he basically says everybody knew, everybody who worked with him, anybody who worked with him knew this and is complicit because he was getting them awards. He was getting them money and he was buying them vacations and cars and jets and all kinds of stuff. So it's just horrendous that there was this code of silence that was happening while these women were being completely, you know, demolished and abused by this scumbag.
It's the pedophile with candy, man. I just keep handing it out because you're going to keep coming my way. And that's who this guy is. He is a complete animal. And the people that were complicit, they got to live with it for the rest of their lives in the same way that the people at Fox News and in the news business knew about Bill O'Reilly, the people in show business that knew about Bill Cosby, and the people that knew what Donald Trump was doing with the dozens of women who have accused him. Everybody who knew is part of the problem. So
the one thing I will say about this, the one bright thing about this is that this Me Too thing that is happening on Facebook and on Twitter has become a really amazing thing. And Alyssa Milano kind of came up with the idea, as you know. So many women are finding their voices now, are able to come out and say it. And I think that that's the one good thing that's come out of this, is that women are starting to actually speak up. The one bad thing, the horrible thing, is that looking at my news feed the past few days and feeling just destroyed by how many of my friends on my news feed have posted Me Too's.
Yeah.
It was like 99% of women have suffered some sort of harassment, be it from the lowest level to, you know.
Right, and the other 1% probably just didn't want to talk about
it. Right.
It's astonishing and horrible and overwhelming. But I will say this, the fact that women are coming out and finding a voice for this and an outlet for this is the one good thing that's come out of this whole thing.
Well, that's part one, right? Part two is, what did men learn? Did men learn anything from this? Do men look at Harvey Weinstein and go, I got to look at my own behavior? Not that I'm Harvey Weinstein, not that you're Harvey Weinstein, but you got to look at your own behavior and go, what am I doing?
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Next film screening for Nick, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, AMC Rosemont 18, Tuesday, November 14th. How do people get tickets?
They can go to amctheaters.com. It's going to be really great. And I believe they're going to have like at the restaurant, they're going to have like a special Thanksgiving dinner that you can order. So you can get like some turkey and some dressing and all that stuff. So
I know you go to bed at a certain time during the show, but I will tell you that the only one in the country I know who's more aggravated by Donald Trump than me is Keith Olbermann. He'll be unplugging his new book this morning at 9:10.
Cool.
The book is called Trump is Effing Crazy.
Oh, man.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
You got it, buddy.
Big story next, 720 WGN.
To refuse the obligations of international leadership and our duty to remain the last best hope of Earth for the sake of some half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked up by people who would rather find scapegoats and solve problems.
You heard what he said yesterday, Senator McCain.
Yeah, well, I hear it, and people have to be careful because at some point I fight back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm being very nice. I'm being very, very nice.
I have faced some pretty tough adversaries in the past. I'm not interested in confronting the president. I'm interested in working with the president.
Once again, I'll take the 80-year-old guy with cancer again and again and again, 10 times out of 10. It is 6:44. Before we get to the important things we need to talk about, our friend Chuck Todd's here. The podcast is 1947. The MTP Daily Show's on every day on Meet the Press. And Meet the Press is Sundays. And Chuck, how do your Nats not beat the Cubs when the Cubs hit $1.60?
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? It's a great question. The vaunted lineup. The more frustrating question, I think, from the Nats is, they had the better pitching, and they had the better lineup, and they still seemed to lose. And what was impressive about the Nats loss, though, is you can't blame one person.
You can spread it around.
Everybody did something stupid to let that team down.
It's teamwork. It's a contribution. It's every phase of the game. It's offense. It's defense. It's all of it.
It was. But let's be realistic here. The Cubs and the Nationals beat the living daylights out of each other.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers have taken advantage. They really have. The Cubs still look exhausted.
Yeah, oh, they're very tired. They're very, very tired. As a matter of fact, Joe Maddon barely had enough energy to get kicked out of the game last night, but he sucked it up for the boys. I also
that was the strangest call.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
That was the strangest call, no doubt. But let's think about the real problem here. I'm sick and tired of these games starting at 9 o'clock at night on the East Coast. I'm sorry.
No, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And baseball continues to create a huge problem for themselves because, hey, school night, you want to have any hope for the next generation of kids who already aren't playing baseball to be involved? Forget about it.
I was thinking last night, God, I wish they never put lights up at Wrigley just to have forced baseball to have scheduled that game in the daytime.
Yeah,
but they would have moved it to St. Louis. That's what they said they were going to do back in 84.
Yeah, you're right. By the way, I wanted to also send you a faux bro hug for Aaron Rodgers because you've had a rough sports week, my friend.
I have to say, I may not watch football this week. I'm that impressed about it. It's just, look, the games are more. I'm obviously biased with Rodgers, but I think the NFL's more entertaining when he's in it. I think this is going to hurt the league. The Packers are scheduled to be in primetime. You know, in order to bump up ratings, they put the Packers, Patriots, Steelers, Cowboys in like every primetime game you can think of.
Yep.
That's a lot of Brett Hundley that America's going to be watching, put it that way. I don't think that's what they signed up for.
Dave, am I right about this? Are they bringing back Zeke Brakowski? Is he is he backing up?
No, nor Don Majkowski. Nice. No, they're not. They're going with Brett Hundley.
So I'm watching MTB Daily the other day, and Chuck does this thing at the end of the show, what he's obsessed with, which is always entertaining. But you brought up a great point about the McCain speech, which I wanted to highlight here. Everybody jumped on these, taking shots at Trump. Trump's going to take shots back at him and all of that. But you heard something different, and I heard a similar thing. But explain.
Well, look, John McCain was making a case for America's role as leader of the free world post-World War II. And he was making the case that, look, the multilateralism that the United States essentially ushered in post-World War II from the Marshall Plan and everything else is what has brought the world peace and stability. And for all the flaws, I mean, he was making this case. And this has been the greatest 100 years in American history. You know, we're not quite at 100 since World War II. But, I mean, this has been an amazing run. So let's totally change how we've conducted ourselves here. It is, the point was, he was making the case for why nationalism, why isolationism for the United States of America just not only even won't work, it'll be bad for the United States.
It would be bad for the world. And I also heard from McCain in that speech. The world owes us a debt of gratitude, but we owe the world as well. And we owe the world the responsibility that we benefit from of stepping up and leading when leading is the call.
Look, there was something that was more poignant when you could hear the fragility in his voice.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, this is a man who has had he found purpose in public service in his life, and he is going to take his last breath, obviously fighting for his democratic ideals. Whatever you think of John McCain, the politician, we should all sort of aspire to live that life as a citizen.
Amen. Amen. I've long past the point of surprise that this president offends me, but more so than even what he did or it was perceived he did to the widow of Green Beret Johnson yesterday. The using General Kelly's son in a comment that turned out to be political. I don't know how you cross that line, and I don't know how General Kelly works with him beyond that. I'm not making a judgment call for him. I just feel for him.
No, I don't know either. I'm well aware of how hesitant General Kelly is to talk publicly about his son. First time I interviewed him, I had a question about the Afghanistan war, and he immediately said, please don't bring on my son. I'd like to leave that off. And, okay, I respected that. I have not lost a child. I think that is the hardest thing for any parent to deal with. It is against the laws of nature. It is something that some parents are inconsolable for life, and I get it. I get it. So I have to say, I wouldn't be surprised if what the president has done in using General Kelly, something like this, will ultimately be an unforgivable offense for General Kelly. Now, he's a patriot, and he may decide he's not going to embarrass the president today, tomorrow. But I think he's not long for this job.
Which is bad for the rest of us.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the straw. Maybe it's the end of the year. Maybe it's, you know, that's the type of guy he is. But that became the straw for him of staying long term.
Chuck, do you expect any other military fallout as well, either from another high-ranking general or McMaster or Tillerson, anybody, just specifically regarding this incident? Because this seems to have really crossed a line.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting you say this. You know, here we are 9 months in, and we're now all conditioned to his crazy. You know, every week is really the same, though the controversy is different. You know, whether it's him wading into the NFL, him trying to politicize how you console the parents of military casualties, to every week there's a new thing, and I think it's wearing down official Washington. It's certainly wearing us down in the press. I think it's wearing the public down, which is actually a not a good thing, right? I think there's not a normalization, but sort of a resignation about it all. So, no, I don't expect – I mean, I could tell you the way Washington reacts to when Trump does these things. They all just want to bury their head in the sand. You know, every military leader, every politician is tired of having answered Trump questions.
And understandably so.
But if we're so conditioned if we're so conditioned now to be this way and to expect it, because I agree with you, Todd, what incentive then is there for Congress to move forward with any sort of impeachment proceedings or investigation into Russia? I mean, where did that all go?
Oh, I think that's still there. No, I actually think, though, it has I think we're conditioned to sort of the day-to-day, meaning that we're just sort of exhausted from being outraged.
Yeah.
It's probably where I do think this stuff does have an impact is actually in those very halls of Congress. There is nobody in Washington that is going to do President Trump, that is going to go out on a limb for President Trump, that is going to cast a vote because he asked them to, that is going to take a job because he asked them to. So I think all of this, while we're exhausted from the outrage, and there's sort of like this, like, how do you, here we go again, I'm one of his crazy tweet storms or whatever. Where it does have a real impact is on Capitol Hill. So, no, I actually think it's motivating the investigators more, you know, because I think there's a whole bunch of – look, I can't tell you how many members of Congress have said off the record, Republicans, to me, well, it'll be interesting to see what Mueller finds. You know, if he went away tomorrow, I don't know if there's many people in Washington that would shed a tear.
No, and honestly, I, as much as he, I believe, hates the job, I think he would be pleased to go away if he could figure out a way out. And that may be the ultimate end of this before we ever get to an impeachment discussion.
Oh, that I don't buy. He's not a quitter.
Well, he's not a quitter because of his own damage. No. My point is he doesn't like the job, and I think if there's evidence from Mueller or somebody else that comes up that says, here's a couple of options, one is criminal prosecution, the other is you stay in the job, then I think he finds a way.
Yeah.
Steak dinner next time you're
know.
In town.
I think he fights to the very bitter end. Okay. That's what you know, remember, this is the guy that files lawsuits, counter lawsuits to anybody that files a lawsuit to him.
Yeah, the stakes are higher here, though. That's why we're betting a steak dinner next time you're in town.
I'm in.
All right, man. All the best. And watch today when you can get an opportunity, as you do every day, on MSNBC, 4 o'clock Chicago time, for MTP Daily. Don't forget the podcast, 1947. I'll meet you Sunday morning.
Please. All right,
buddy. All the best.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, guys.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All right, new budget for the state. At least we're getting in that general direction, and Governor Rauner will join us in just a second. We have an internal problem on the program today, and I think we could have some fun with this, and that's that Sandberg's phone is broken, and she's on the phone all day because it's a producer, right? She's on the phone all day, and when her phone goes off, the ringer's off, so she has it set on vibrate, but it goes off like there's a taser being shot at her. So it'd be fun if I give out her cell phone and we all text her at the same time.
It's like a jolt of electricity.
I mean, you got to get a new phone anyway. Why not?
It actually shoots out electricity at her?
It gives her like a jolt, like a...
Andrea, text her so you can hear this.
Mary,
on the
I'm
air.
Sorry. I've been texting her for fun.
She have it in her pocket? Where she have it?
All right, up your microphone's ear. On. Hold it up to the microphone. Go ahead and text her now.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my God.
Ouch. So if I'm on the phone...
It's not a ringtone, it's a taser.
Wow.
When I'm on the phone and people are texting me, it's like vibrating my whole brain.
It's like squirrel gas. It's just...
I just didn't want...
Andrea's
promise.
Been enjoying buzzing me all day.
She was in here the past 2 days just banging... I'm banging
I've
her
been
phone
banging
on,
it to try to get it to stop.
On the countertop.
I don't want to cooperate.
There's been lots of... Lots of swearing ensued, yes.
I understand. Eric Edelstein will join us here in a couple minutes. The governor will join us as well, in just a minute as well, to talk about the budget, amongst other things, the Amazon headquarters and all of that. Is the Apple store behind us open?
I hope so. It looks like it is.
I think
do a soft opening?
Yeah.
It's a struggling young company. You would think they'd make a big deal out of it, right?
I don't see the lines. Normally, don't you think there'd be people waiting in line to be the first customers at the Apple
store? You would think you'd hear if the Apple store was open. Anyway, the big Apple store opening's coming up as well. And then Friday night, the Saturday Night Live exhibit, which looks very cool, will open at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Good luck to everybody involved with that. You know what I got to get on? I haven't talked to him in a long time. Is Tim Kazurinsky. I love Kaz. He was on Channel 9 yesterday, so we had to get him on.
You know, they opened up that Apple store. That's going to be nice for Mary. She could just take her phone right across the parking lot there.
You know, wait, let's go to breaking news. Do you have information?
I got an invitation to the grand opening.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
It is tomorrow at 5 p.m.
It's too late. Can you make it like 10 a.m., Dave?
Let me call.
Can you rearrange it?
Yeah, you get a plus one on that, Dave?
It doesn't say. It just says I need to come there and spend a lot of money.
Steve Grzanich, as you know, you can go to any event in town and just pull up. You just take out that hat you wear with a giant 3x5 card that says press on it.
Right, you're right.
And just walk in.
Sometimes I forget about I have that, yeah.
630 Texter, this is new Starbucks flavors. The Madagano, really, really old stale coffee.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Let's see, 847. Steve, how about fat, bald, and stupid? It's an empty cup full of Democratic promises. Huh?
Oh,
there you go.
I love our listeners.
That's close. It's 7:17. Are we a day off on the governor? The governor's not appearing today?
Apparently
governor's
her text
tomorrow.
Messages zapped him to the next day. So he's going to be out tomorrow.
Hold on a second. You don't make mistakes like this. What happened? How was the governor Friday? Is this the governor's office, or is this you and your phone?
It's my problem. Wow. The phone has driven her this crazy. Yeah. I'm telling you, I'm scared for my life in here.
If Mike runs, it's time for all of us to run.
Needs security.
All right. Well, listen, I want to thank the governor for not coming on today because we look forward to talking to him tomorrow.
Well, he's going to have a big announcement today. This is going to be really cool when he talks to us about this new innovation center in the South Loop.
Probably should have come on today to talk about it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We'll get all the details.
Eric Edelstein.
Look
here.
How messed up this state is. They can't even sketch. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you think when the governor heard you were in the studio, he backed
yeah,
out?
Yeah, he totally. He decided to pull out.
All right, so we have got a hot mess from sea to shining sea. We'll tear it apart in politics and talk about things with Eric here in just a second. Mary, traffic, please. I'm going to turn my own mic on. Eric Edelstein's here. Pat Brady's still on the road. He'll be back for next week's festivities. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
The Democratic gubernatorial candidates got together the other day. Chris Kennedy was one who said, Madigan's got to go. It's too long. Madigan's got to go. Surprisingly, J.B. Pritzker didn't chime in at that point.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
you know, Pritzker's running a very conservative, by-the-book campaign. He spent $30 million. He's got a theory of the case that he can run as the insider, continue to kind of reinforce status quo. And look, it may end up working, but I think there's a lot of people that think that change has to go beyond just Governor Rauner to a whole structural thing. And I'm not going to get into individuals and all that. And, you know, I've certainly done work for Speaker Madigan and the Democrats. But I think that there is wholesale change that has to go beyond any one politician in the state. Actually, Kennedy today is given he has given a series of these deeper dive policy speeches, one on property tax reform and education funding. He did one on gun violence. He did one on the environment. Today, he's giving one on government reform and the issue on how important issues like things you've talked about, term limits and fair maps and some of these other things. And that, you know, look, Illinois has become a laughingstock, and it's a function beyond one person, beyond one governor, beyond one politician. And we got to do something about it. And
it's a bipartisan failure.
It is. And, you know, Kennedy has been trying to address that. I think, you know, Pritzker's going to continue to spend tens of millions of dollars and run television ads, which is fine. But he'll have his TV ads, but he's going to be out there talking about real substance. And hopefully primary voters are going to pay attention.
Kennedy and Biss, too, were the only ones in the forum earlier this week who spoke out a little bit about Mike Madigan. Pritzker would not say anything negative.
Yeah.
Not that you were encouraging negative or mudslinging during that, but.
Well, look, I mean, here's the thing. People are tired of politicians fighting with politicians at one level. And so I think this sort of like, well, it's his fault or it's her fault and it's all this kind of stuff. But there is a certain amount of honesty that you expect. And I think that there's a sense of we need not just the kind of change that comes with changing one governor, but the kind of change that really structurally changes the way we run this government. And that's what Kennedy's talking about.
The governor's race really won't heat up until springtime. If you're running for office, do you touch the budget issue here or do you leave it alone?
Well, it's such a moving target that, you know, as soon as you try to say something about it, it seems like this governor changes the goalposts. He's done that repeatedly for 3 years. So I think what you have to do, and what Kennedy's done and other candidates to some extent, is talk in more broad brush. And I don't mean be vague, but I mean, what are your principles on budget? And, you know, again, you asked me. So, you know, Kennedy's principle is this whole property tax racket has to be fixed. And as long as we rely on property taxes to fund schools, to fund police, to fund local government, we're never going to have a real budget that gets us out of some of the problems. So I think you have to talk at a higher level.
Yeah, because racket would be the correct word here. And I personally am not a fan of hearing candidates talk specifics when it comes to stuff they have no control over until they get into office.
Yeah.
Because it's you don't know till you're there.
That's right. But we've also gone through this cycle, and this is a function of this big money. And Rauner certainly did this. It's a combination of two things, Steve. I don't want to get too granular, but the combination of
the audience is much smarter than I am. Go ahead.
Well, political journalism being hollowed out, not because there aren't great reporters, but because the challenging budgets at news outlets where you don't have the same scrutiny of candidates. That combined with the amount of money spent on television advertising allows us to get candidates who don't have to say they stand for anything, positions until after the election. Look, we went through a whole thing with Governor Rauner, and maybe I'm picking on him, but he's a prime example. He ran $20-25 million of ads saying, I want to shake up Springfield, without any substantive policy, without telling us what he's going to do about a budget, without telling us what he's going to do. And look, this is the situation we ended up in. And I think as citizens and as journalists to some extent, we have to demand that candidates tell us what they're going to do before the election, not after.
I want to take this up with you in a few minutes. Last night, CNN did their regular rollout of a good idea that, frankly, has gotten tired, and their idea of these town halls. Town halls are generally pretty good ratings grabs for people who are politically savvy or people that want to watch that stuff. But I don't need to see Bernie Sanders anymore, and I'm wondering if you think Bernie Sanders is ultimately possibly a threat to the long-term health of the Democratic Party if he is going to be the only guy that's out there talking, because the more he's a centralized guy, it seems to me that he becomes the voice of a party looking for a voice. I don't know that that's good for Democrats. Hold that thought.
Okay.
Stand by. But you can play, because technically, you could win. It's Hawker Riddle time. Nobody does the riddles quite like this show. Hawker Riddle. I'm actually being told nobody does riddles. Born in Chicago, alum of Maine East, my star began rising when The Force was released. My indie film somehow have reached up to four. A witness, a fugitive of galactical war. Who am I? Again, these are Chicago natives. Chicago people. That's right, it's Ronnie Woo Woo. Born in Chicago, alum of Maine East, my star began rising. The Force was released. My indie film somehow have reached up to four. A witness, a fugitive of galactical war. 312-981-7200. Back with the big story coming up on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
In Denmark, which he brought up, for hip replacement was 55 days, 59 days for knee replacement. There is a reason why, Bernie, I didn't interrupt you.
I'm
just
not
relax.
Interrupting
just
you.
Relax.
Come on. Sure. The Italian in me.
Hold on, I was in the middle of making a point.
The long point, Ted. We're running out of time here.
You know, as some might say, curb your enthusiasm. By the way, the impression Larry David does of you is spectacular and uncanny.
And someday, you may also have somebody impersonate you. Yeah, you gotta work on it, kid.
Hey!
Wow. Did you see the shark CNN jump last night? Because that's just not good. It's not good. All right, so Bernie Sanders. Good for the party, bad for the party?
I think he's a mixed bag. I think he creates an energy. I think that there's a power on the left that feels vindicated after Hillary's loss that was supporting him. But I think fundamentally it's a problem for the party when the most popular politician in the Democratic Party isn't even a Democrat. And, you know, I respect him for having his opinions and being an independent and being identified as a socialist. But our party's got to get back to some traditional ideas, and we're not really doing that at the moment.
And at what point can we talk about age being an issue without it being politically incorrect and offensive? Because here's the bottom line. All of us are not what we once were. And there has to be a realization within whatever your limits now are and the job you're being asked to do. Now, I'm not saying Bernie Sanders isn't up to being a senator, but Bernie Sanders in 2020, I believe, will be 147 years old.
I think 148, but
yeah.
Look, I think Democratic Party, you know, they're working on this new motto. Some of the things people have come up with are like 75 is the new 35.
Somebody said the other day, 80 isn't the new anything.
But look, there are a younger generation of leaders out there. Some are in local government, some are in federal government. I think you're going to hear some of those voices. They're going to be more emboldened. You've got Kamala Harris. You've got Kirsten Gillibrand, you've got Mark Warner, you've got Pete Buttigieg up in South Bend, who's a fascinating guy, the mayor of South Bend, who is talking about more Midwest kind of industrial economic policy. Hitting home is sort of his message. We got to talk about things that matter to people in the heartland. So I think there are a new generation of leaders you're going to hear more and more from.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Vice President Biden. And if anybody could handle being president at 80, I think he could. But I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's a challenge when the voices, I think, are of a certain generation. I'm not going to say a certain age you're disqualified or anything like that. I don't believe that.
Well, I don't know that there is one. But right. You know, if it's the hardest job in the world.
Right.
Should we have someone who is 80, 75, 85? By the way, I guarantee you I'll feel differently when I'm that age.
Of course.
But from this vantage point, I think it's too old.
But I also think there's a more fundamental notion, which is a new generation of ideas. It isn't just age.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
About having a new energy and a new way to look at the party and how to reinvigorate it.
So in the same way the Republicans should have been ready for that little thing they promised for all those years, flipping Obamacare, how are the Democrats not ready for new leadership in the party?
Well, they should be. And look, I think to some extent they will be, but sometimes change takes a little longer than you would expect. But, you know, can I go back on the Obamacare thing for a second? Because there was an interesting piece by a Republican conservative who's been critical of the Republican establishment who said, what does it say about the Republican Party in their soul if they promised Obamacare repeal? They never really intellectually were honest about what they'd replace it with. And now they've switched to tax reform. And his point was, this is about their donor base, not about their electoral base.
Which is,
and they never really cared about repealing Obamacare. They cared about winning elections off of Obama.
Completely agree.
But all they want to do is cut corporate taxes. And I think that's a sad state of sort of.
Well, I'm not even sure the strategy goes that deep. I think there's a lot of people. You know more than I do when it comes to members of Congress, but I know a lot of them. These are not Mensa members. For everybody that thinks you have to pass some incredible entrance exam to be a member of the 435 or the 100, I'm here to tell you, you don't.
No, you don't.
And there are some people that are very frightening. And thank goodness for some of the staffs that represent some of these people, or we would be in as much trouble as we are in the White House.
There's no question. But let's be candid and speak truth here. And, you know, I'm to somewhat extent complicit because I spend all that money that's spent on campaigns. But when you have the Wild West of campaign funding and you have billionaires and millionaires and corporations funding our politics, the politicians who get elected are going to have to listen to them. And that's not a very healthy democratic situation, but I think it's one that we live in today. And it's a sad state.
Eric, there's an organization called Emily's List, and they distribute money to women running for office all over the country. Some of these numbers were crazy. In 2015, 2016, the entire election cycle, 920 women reached out to try to get funding. Since President Trump was inaugurated, so this is just since January, 19,000 have reached out to the organization. And we've talked about this, too. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of female candidates running anymore, but apparently this shows that they are reaching out, starting at different levels.
Well, this is one of the silver linings of the Trump debacle, which is the energy and the number of people who are stepping forward, men and women, who say, I can't sit on the sidelines in this moment. I need to do something. I've never seen it in my career all over the country. The number of people, women and men, who want to step forward and run for Congress and governor and local office and Senate, it's remarkable. And I'm hopeful that tells you something. People haven't turned the other way and said, I don't care. I mean, Chuck Todd said something interesting. He goes, D.C., whenever Trump speaks out, they just want to put their head in the sand. I think what we're seeing is the opposite effect out in the country, where people are saying, I can't any longer put my head in the sand. I got to step up and do something.
There's a lot of folks who believe that, to bring it full circle back to Trump here, that the Democrats can't do anything. They're the party out of power. They can't do anything. I completely disagree with that. Because leadership in the Democratic Party, I feel, is sitting back waiting for the destruction to continue to a level where they think, well, now we should probably step in. That's a very dangerous game to play, because everybody's talking about the election a year from now, and it's over a year from now. What is going to be left of a country that could be on the brink of World War III if we're just playing politics?
I agree, Steve. And look, you know, there's that old adage of if your opponents are destroying themselves, get out of the way and be quiet. But I think in this moment, that's not okay. I think we have to be putting forward our own ideas as well as taking this guy on. You and I have talked about this, Steve, and you and Chuck Todd talked about it a little earlier this morning. There's this interesting dynamic in American life, which is we want to normalize everything. And I think there's, to some extent, it's healthy, but it's also dangerous. You know, we've normalized horrible things in our past, normalized the destruction of the native populations and slavery and women not being able to vote. And somehow it becomes, well, that's just how it is until change happens. And I think we're doing that in this Trump moment. We will look back on this moment and say,
why didn't we do more?
This was a stain. This was a curse on this country, and we all needed to do more. And present company included. I'm just saying it's very easy to go about our lives and say, oh, that's just how Trump is. Oh, that's the outrage of this week. But that's not okay. We have to continue to speak out, and we have to say, when you take on Gold Star families, when you insult the people who've lost loved ones defending this country, that's not okay, and it's not normal behavior, and we can't just say, oh, that's just Trump being Trump.
Yeah, and there's a small group who asked me daily to shut up about this, and I refuse.
Can't.
And if it costs listeners, I'm upset about that, but that's the risk of doing this, because I know the vast majority of you share the worry and concern. This is not Republican. This is not Democrat. This is American. And he is not fit for office. And why this is not the number one agenda item in Congress is beyond me.
Well, I think part of the problem is that even before Trump, we've elevated our politics where we've run out of adjectives and adverbs. So everything is the worst and the most horrible. Mm-hmm. So what happens, Steve, and you've said this, when you're faced with the worst and the most horrible, you know, you've run out of words to describe it. So it just seems normal. But we can't allow it to be normal. And, you know, we all have to do something about that.
Yeah, but, and I would ask all of you, whatever fatigue you're suffering from this, to suck it up and suffer a little more, because it takes everybody to stop a train coming at you like this, and we've never seen anything like it. Look, it needs to stop.
I get it. It's anxiety producing, and we'd all rather turn away and watch sports and think that everything's great. Because that makes your stomach feel better and makes your head feel better.
Yeah, that's a great point. Nobody wants to live in the unpleasantness every day.
No. It's you know, my wife works in the mental health community, and she said the impact this has on people, you have no idea. Right. People who can't watch the news, and it's not about politics. It's about the upset of the world.
And not just adults. We were talking, too, about you have a family member who is, not happy with what's going on. My friend's son literally has anxiety over the fact of what's happening in the world, and he's trying to say, hey, it's okay, it's going to be okay, and he thinks the end of the world is here because of everything politically and all the hurricanes and natural devastations that have occurred. Not good.
Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti scheduled to appear next. Stand by for that, but first, thank you, my friend. It's always good seeing you. And, you're welcome here anytime. Pat's not here. I should know that. Next, Lincoln Forum events and information at what website?
At the LincolnForum.org.
Okay, LincolnForum.org. Go there, get tickets, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Evelyn Sanguinetti is your lieutenant governor, and she's receiving a nice award today. Congratulations on that.
Good morning. Thank you so much, and thank you guys for having me this morning.
Well, I appreciate you being on. Transform Illinois does what?
Well, it's a good government group. They believe in streamlining government with the ultimate effect of saving money for the taxpayer. So I've known about Transform Illinois for some time. I've been asked to speak, but this year I'm actually getting an award, so it's quite the honor.
Is it do you know what it is? Is it a trophy? Is it a plaque? I mean, what is it? Is it an Oscar? Is it a Tony?
You know, I don't know. I know that Jack Franks got the award last year, and it was really cool, but it was not like the figure like Transformer. No, nothing like that.
Okay, well, that's fine. Well, it's a nice thing, so congratulations on that. The governor's going to be on with us tomorrow to talk about a number of things, but what are we hearing about the Amazon headquarters, if anything?
Well, we've put our bid out, and we're hopeful. You know, Chicago is a wonderful city. We believe it is the best, and we are hopeful that we will get that contract. So we have that out, and we also unveiled the governor's recent executive order on our opioid issue here in Illinois and all over the country. So that's something that's very fresh. We have the executive order that the governor issued, and also we have our opioid prevention report. And so I'm touring the state in that regard to bring more awareness to the issue.
And can you talk, too, about the new innovation center that's being unveiled today in the South Loop? This is going to be huge once it comes to fruition.
Yes, that's going to be really exciting. It's a partnership that's being created, and it's going to occur in the South Loop of Illinois. And the governor has said that there's going to be $200 million in private donations, and the Illinois General Assembly, as well as the governor, are also going to be working out the rest of the funding, because this is certainly something that we need. We need more innovation here in Illinois, particularly in the South Loop area. And it's going to be great news once the governor breaks that out in a few hours.
Just to bring a full circle here, or at least half circle, back to the opioid question. I know part of the budget and cutting the $200 million off the top, which frankly makes a dent, but not a big one. And we'll take this up with the governor as well tomorrow. But there is some addiction money that had to be cut out of that as well. Is that not include the opioid problem?
Well, frankly, we got a lot of money from the federal government. I know that the Department of Human Services, as well as the Department of Public Health, Dr. Bruni, as well as Director Shaw, have been working very hard. We've been able to ascertain $40 million in federal monies in order to start attacking this problem. It's going to take far more. Truth be told, you know, Illinois has been facing this fiscal crisis for many decades, but we needed to hit the ground running. We couldn't be negligent and be asleep at the wheel when we have our children dying and we have people overdosing. This epidemic knows no neighborhood, no class, no gender. It's an equal opportunity aggressor. So thankfully, we've been able to generate some monies coming in from the federal government.
Yeah, and we'll see if that zeroes out. Now, we'll take this up with the governor tomorrow. Congrats on your award, and thanks for jumping on.
Thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful day.
You as well. Evelyn Sanguinetti, Lieutenant Governor, news next. And then Dean's back.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
On the Steve Cochran Show all-time top 10. This didn't make it, but it was 11. You go,
hey, hey, hey.
It's a little cool in the gang.
What you got to say?
Hollywood swinging.
Said, hey, hey, hey.
Dean Richards scheduled to join us after a long, long trip to the Greek islands and beyond. But he could be with Governor Rauner this morning. Governor Rauner didn't do the show, so who knows?
I want it to be clear that everyone knows I messed up Governor Rauner's booking. Okay. That's for tomorrow. That is my fault.
Is Dean with us?
Dean is not with us, though I have in print him telling me that he'd be back on the air Thursday, October 19th.
Well, that would be today, wouldn't it?
That would be.
Do you think he didn't clear customs for real like I thought he might?
You know, sometimes if you try to smuggle like feta cheese or things like that back into the country, they don't look fondly on that.
Those little beagles catch you when you come in.
All right, so here's what I'll do. First caller who wants to do show business news at 312-981-7200. Maybe you're somebody that watches a lot of Entertainment Tonight and The Insider. And what's the other show?
Extra. Access Hollywood.
Access Hollywood. E-News Daily. So if you know Hollywood news, I'd like to hire you right now as the new dean for one segment.
How about TMZ?
We have prizes for you.
How about the TMZ show?
TMZ. Yeah. Harvey, but what's his last name?
Oh, 11.
No, it's not Weinstein.
We said Harvey.
It's Levin, isn't it?
No, the TMZ guy.
Not Harvey. I know. Weinstein.
Harvey Levin?
I think it's Harvey Levin.
I think it is. Yeah, yeah. 312-981-7200 is the number. So, Mike, see if you can get me a Hollywood reporter, and we'll go ahead and give them their big show business break here. I'm worried about Dean now. What do you think?
Well, I want to not be worried, and I want to be judgmental about him not showing up today.
Mm-hmm.
But I fear if there's something bad that happened, then I'll feel bad that I was angry about it.
So save your anger?
Yeah. I mean, in the last
Let's just say your anger is pending.
Yes, it is on the table. And if it's just a, you know what, and this is hitting me deep because in my prior, I was married once before, and my ex-husband was coming back from Mumbai after being gone for about 4 weeks. And he said I was to pick him up at the airport on a Saturday, and he was coming back. I even bought a new dress, whatever. On Friday, I was up in New Buffalo doing the show I worked for then from a lake house.
Mm-hmm.
And I start getting these, which had bad cell service. I started getting these mean voicemails that weren't from my ex-husband about me blowing him off. What are you getting your nails done? You didn't pick me up. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, so he was on India time.
Right. He had given the wrong date.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And it was Saturday in India, but it didn't take away. Even though he was incorrect, I heard all these mean messages and he never said sorry or anything, you know, like.
Well, because when somebody lashes out, you automatically assume that you've screwed up, even if they've screwed up.
Right.
That's just human nature. And by the way, the time change from here to Greece is
8 hours.
8 hours. So
is it possible he's in a Greek prison somewhere?
There's no prisons in Greece.
There's no. Okay.
They can't afford them anymore. But the food is really good, I hear. And there's dancing and partying till late.
I haven't seen a post
hours.
For him lately on Facebook, which is how I go by everybody's life.
Oh, then he's probably in jail.
Yeah.
Jefferson in Lincoln Square will do some show business news for us in a second. You'll have to chime in on a couple of spots.
I have a great story about Carrie Fisher.
Well,
too.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. You'll love this. Trust me.
It's 8:18. Let's go to Mary with the traffic trouble spots. What's happening? Then Jefferson, hold on. You're next. Well, look, Dean had a nice run with us on the show, you know, but you can't show up for the segment. I don't know what else to say other than the fact that we'd like to welcome Jefferson from Lincoln Square. First off, Jefferson, it's a great name.
Oh, thank you.
It's a great show business name. What's your last name?
Goldie.
Yeah, let's just go with Jefferson. It's Jefferson on show business.
Yes, sir.
And are you a pop culture guru?
You know what? I would like to think I am. I'm up on pop culture.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. So the way this works generally is there's three stories we hit, and then I interrupt you and say stupid things. So go ahead and tell me story number one.
Okay. Well, let's just start. My name is Jefferson Goldie, and this is WGN News, 7:20 a.m. right here. Guys, we have a huge game coming up on Clark and Addison, the Battle of the Lefties. We got Quintana versus Kershaw.
Wait, well, hold on a second, dude. Hold on.
Did you say sports or
I said pop culture, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, Cubs are pop culture, sort of.
So you should be doing the Dean Report, then?
Hold on. Let me go back to Jefferson. Because, Jefferson, you've already won big prizes. Jefferson, this isn't a sports segment. This is an entertainment segment.
Hey, buddy. The Cubs are life right now.
I like your spunkiness. All right, what's story number two?
Let's see what we got here. Let's talk about some movies coming out.
There you go. Now you're talking.
Now, here's the thing. I have no idea what's coming out, but go see them anyway because they're probably going to be amazing.
All right, hold on a second. Hold on. Hit him with the wrong answer buzzer again.
Oh, poor guy.
Should I even go back for story number three?
Yeah, let's see what he has.
I mean, you might as well at this point, right? All right, Jefferson, we're very excited to hear story number three.
Story number three, Donald Trump signs on a new contestant with Dancing with the Stars next season. It's going to be a bombshell. It's going to be the best season.
All right.
Fake news.
Well, the name's good. Maybe we could just use his name. Jefferson on show business. Yeah. All right, Sandberg, after you're done yelling at Dean, go ahead and give Jefferson some prizes for being on. I don't think Jefferson entirely understood the segment.
Yeah, he's just excited to be on the air.
But he's got a really cool name. He's a nice guy.
He does.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He basically went sports. What was the second one?
I don't know.
And where did he say he lived?
Oh, Linked. Sports, movies he didn't know about.
And Trump.
And a Trump bit.
And fake Trump.
Do you say he lived in Lincoln Square?
Yeah.
So his name
probably
is...
Probably knows our sons.
He might, but his name is Jefferson, yeah. And he lives in Lincoln Square.
Right.
He did about talk that. About Dancing with the Stars, though,
but
a
was,
bit.
But that was a bit.
Fake news.
Yeah, but he kind of just said it. You know.
You went through real ones?
Just brought it in.
Give me the Carrie Fisher story.
All right, Carrie Fisher story. This is awesome. So the late Carrie Fisher, apparently a friend was doing an interview with a London talk show and told the story about Carrie Fisher came to the aid of her friend, screenwriter Heather Robinson. And Heather Robinson was going to, for a job interview, was sexually harassed by an unnamed Oscar-winning executive. No word if it's Harvey Weinstein or not. But so Heather Robinson tells Carrie Fisher what happened to her. She was sexually harassed. This guy tried to force himself on her while they were driving in his car. This was back in 2000. So Carrie Fisher took a cow's tongue, wrapped it in a Tiffany box, and hand-delivered it to the Hollywood producer. It was an executive at Sony.
Oh, sending a message.
Yeah, it was a cow's tongue from Jerry
Spinatelli. It's like a horse head.
Yeah, and she hand-delivered it and wrote the note, "If you ever touch my darling Heather or any other woman again, the next delivery will be something of yours in a much smaller box."
Well, that's funny.
Yeah, Heather Robinson was actually the one telling that story. But how about
funny.
That? If you ever touch any woman again, the next delivery will be something of yours in a smaller box.
That's very funny.
Isn't that great? So,
all right, Fisher. Well, there you go. So, Jefferson, you're still on hold. That's a show business story. It's 8:27. We're back with a big story coming up on a very odd Thursday show on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
What a weird show today. I mean, it's show number 1013. It's one of the weirdest shows we've had. I don't know. And now I'm told there's a mystery guest on the phone that wants to help out the program today in the middle of all this. Let me go to the phone. Hello, mystery guest.
Good morning, Cochran. It's President Donald Trump calling.
Well.
I heard guests are canceling on you left and right, so that's why I called in.
Well, all right.
I'm a nice guy.
Yeah, I suppose. Listen, have you picked out your Halloween costume yet?
You know what? I was thinking of going as something very scary, very frightening. It's dead, and it's choking small businesses and killing people. You give up? I'm going as Obamacare.
Yeah.
Hanging on for dear life, just like the Cubs.
Hold on a second now. Listen, the healthcare thing, your position has changed left, it's changed right, it's in the middle, it's left, it's right, it's in the middle. What's happening?
Well, as you know, Obamacare is horrible. There's no doctors. There's no nurses. In fact, the only person available to give you a physical is the office receptionist. Now you understand how my plan works?
Listen, I don't entirely. Here's what I'd love for you to do for everybody. Could you explain it?
You know what? I'd be happy to. First, you pay a certain amount, okay? It's like, what, $1 million? And that's what's called your deductible copay, all right? You following? It's, as you know, a co-deductible, okay?
I don't think you're entirely getting it.
Cochran, look, under the Trump plan, every American will have a doctor living in their home.
No, I don't think
that's very attentive care.
I don't. Listen, why did you change your support for the bipartisan bill? The other day you said, listen, Lamar Alexander, I'm in, baby, I'm in. Now, no.
All right, I didn't want to get into this, but frankly, I had a bad experience with bipartisanship in college. I experimented with it, and frankly, it's not me, Steve. It's not me.
You and Senator McConnell, allegedly friends now?
Friends? You know, when we shook hands, I looked Mitch in the eye, and I saw a little teardrop of embalming fluid roll down his cheek. It did. Let me put it this way. McConnell let me play connect the dots with his liver spots when we hugged the other day. It doesn't get any friendlier than that, believe me.
New level of your relationship. Hey, the NFL talked yesterday. The commissioner talked yesterday. NFL still allowing players to kneel during the anthem. What do you want to say?
You know, Roger Goodell's a loser, and I am not going to put up with his horrible disrespect for America, and neither is Vice President Pence. Although when he bent over to tie his shoe in front of the flag in the Oval Office, I almost fired him.
I understand.
The NFL players are being very offensive. But you know what NFL players aren't offensive? The Bears. No offense.
You know,
no offense.
It's a little hard to deny. I will say that may be the only thing you and I fully agree on is that I don't think that players should kneel either, but they have the right to kneel, and you're supposed to be out there protecting the Constitution. But look, we'll take it up on another time.
Do you have any more questions?
Yes, actually I do. Hillary Clinton twisted her ankle during her book tour in England.
Right, very sad.
She had a boot on her leg during a talk show appearance. You heard about it.
Yes, and I feel so incredibly bad about it. Well, for the nurses, I feel bad. I mean, can you imagine how difficult it had to be to fit a boot around one of those gigantic cankles of hers?
That's not good.
God bless those nurses. They're really doing the Lord's work. I mean, they're heroes. They're heroes.
Hard to believe anybody's offended by you. Hey, I saw your Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, yesterday. He denied meeting with any of the Russians again.
Look, Cochran, listen to this. I believe him when he said he didn't meet with any Russians. Russians that offered to bribe him on a weekday. He didn't meet with any Russians that offered to bribe him on a weekday
right.
at an Applebee's
mm-hmm.
during happy hour while eating those delicious cheeseburger egg rolls. He really didn't.
I see. All right.
You know, by the way, did you know that if you say Jeff Sessions backwards 3 times in a mirror, he'll disappear? He's my favorite magic elf working at the Justice Department, that I can tell you.
He's got a bit of a Barney Fife thing going on there, too. Do you see that? I'm sure.
He looks like a little wizard person.
So in your first wife, Ivana's book, your daughter Ivanka says she went through a punk phase back in the 90s. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. You know, she was the best at being punk. So punk rock. I mean, Ivanka was so punk, she would eat her salad with a caviar fork.
Oh, crazy.
I mean, such a rebel. Who does that?
It's nuts.
And she had a personal shopper rip all her jeans for her. And she said, you know, she liked that Nirvana band.
Yeah.
Nirvana.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She always had the chauffeur play that crap in the limo on the way to her expensive private school academy. But she grew out of that phase, just like I grew out of my phase of dating anyone less than a 9. I mean, we all make mistakes, am I right?
It does sound like it was a rough phase, though, for a parent to go through. I'm glad you came out of it okay.
Yeah.
Now, you dropped down in the Forbes list of richest Americans. You lost a bunch of money over the past year. True or false?
False. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. That magazine's just filled with fake news, lies. Lies. And let me tell you something, Cochran. That is the last time I'm posing nude for their centerfold.
Oh, thank
Believe
God.
Me.
Thank you.
$400 million. I mean, that's not really that much when you think about it.
God, I'm trying to get the image out of my head all day. Listen, I know you've got a lot to do, so I appreciate you calling.
Before I go, I have some good news for the people of Puerto Rico, Cochran.
Okay.
Cher is joining the cast of Mamma Mia 2. Now not having power isn't so bad, is it?
Goodbye, Mr. President.
Later, Cochran.
Yes, thank you for the phone call. I don't think he made the show any less weird. I think the show's still been very weird today.
You got him to stop tweeting for the bit.
I did shut it down. Good, yeah. Shut it down for like 3 minutes. Let's get traffic from Mary before we continue. Keith Olbermann after 9 on his book. Stand by for that. What do you got, Mary?
The Steve Cochran Show.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
The Wang Dang Doodle.
Are you serious?
Yep. It's happening again.
Very simple premise this year. Pick a game, pick a score. Closest to the score ends up winning the week. Most weeks won wins the incredible trophy I'll forget to buy. What week are we in? Is this 6, 7?
Seven.
This would be
week 7.
Yeah.
I just got it from Mike. Mike knows.
It is week 7.
Okay, well, thanks for confirming. Mike knows. Are you ready to pick? Everybody's ready? Bennett is standing by.
We need a
by.
Listener for you as well.
We do. 312-981-7200. Listener, call in now. You're going to be on my team. Right outside the window now, two really famous doctors, and neither one of them is Dr. Oz.
Hey, Dr. Mouse.
I hope he brought another flu shot for Andrea.
Oh, God, I hope not.
A booster oh, 2 weeks later. Celebrities are standing by. Not kind of. And again, we need a listener at 312-981-7200. All right, who's going to go first?
I would like Andrea and Steve Grzanich.
Okay, right, so Steve. My pick last week wasn't so good, Andrea, so you take it away.
All right, Steve, what do you think we do? What do you think we go Bears? We'll go hometown
okay.
this team?
All right, I like that.
We're going to do Bears-Panthers 27-21. What do you think, Steve?
For a Bears win?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Is that too high?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because if you want to do a different score, we can go ahead and do that.
No, I think they're going to come out strong.
Okay. That's what we're doing. See, this is harmony on our team. I'm like, right.
I need Mike.
Others who don't share.
Mike Jacobson and Mary. Mike Jacobson, Mary Vandeveld, and Mary's conscience.
All three of them. This is the only three-member team that we have. Mary?
Well, my conscience refuses to play. I think Mike does, too. So that's.
I mean, we really don't have that much time.
Okay, stop.
Here we go.
Patriots over Atlanta, 30-21.
Oh!
I got it in.
Oh. Do you like that pick, Mike?
It's all right. I mean, I probably would have gone with something different.
Okay.
What? Well, then why didn't you pick?
Well, the clock ran out.
Well,
I was
too busy.
Time.
I'm answering phone calls here. I'm pushing buttons.
For
I got a lot of things to do.
And we're really hot on the...
You know, someone's got to pay attention to the traffic.
She mentioned the Patriots. Bill Belichick dissing Tom Brady for a hug.
Yeah, Bill Belichick doesn't like hugs. And I'm not surprised because when I think of Bill Belichick, I think practically Sandberg's twin.
Ooh. I wear a lot of sweatshirts with the sleeves cut off.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, who's next?
Steve Cochran and the listener.
Listener is Tyler in Huntley. Let's go to Tyler in Huntley. Good morning, Tyler.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
You up on the NFL schedule this week?
I am not.
All right, I'm going to give you the game. I'll give you the game I like. You give me the score, okay?
Okay.
New Orleans, Green Bay, and remember... Their evil quarterback is out. I like the Saints. Give me a score.
Saints win 35-24.
30. I like that. 35-24. 35-24 is good. All right, man. You've already won prizes. Hold on. That's Tyler. Tyler and I go way back.
Tyler's going to get an app gift card, just so you know.
Yeah. Pleasing people since 1874. Who is next?
It would be Dave Ennett. And John DeCoste.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hang on one second.
You're on with John.
John? Yeah. So, no, I don't think. No, that game got taken already. Miami. Okay, got it. Miami 24, Jets 21.
Miami 24, Jets 21. It's very good. And I also liked your fake cooperation with a fake phone call to John. That was cool.
Thank you.
I was going to say, there was a quick text, huh, between you two?
Production elements, they are really high.
Hey, John, I'll call you later.
Oh.
Do you see the survey that came out yesterday from NFL players? The quarterback they most don't want on their team is Jay Cutler.
That's a shock, isn't
Almost 50% of those asked in the NFL survey said that's the quarterback they want on their team least.
Well,
Making friends.
I watched a Instagram Live with his wife, Kristen, yesterday, where she was giving some tips and showing her new jewelry line collection. And she was saying that it's hard as a working mom that's who's alone because her husband's in Miami and she's in Nashville.
Oh.
So she's given some tips for easy style.
Yeah, what working mom was she referring to?
She's the working mom.
Oh, okay.
She has three kids.
What time was this on? Because I want to know how I could.
3 p.m.
How could I have possibly missed it?
It was 3 p.m. Eastern. The Emerald Dove feed is what she took over. And
I'm going to do a Facebook Live of me napping today at 3.
This was an Instagram Live, just to be clear. And she said, among other things, is she works out about 4 times a week. She doesn't do any cardio, just lifts weights. And she started with pull-ups. She used to not be able to do any, and now she can do 4.
Wow.
Oh. God, this is all fascinating.
Wow. And she gives the nannies, what, like 6 breaks a day?
She didn't mention anything about any nannies. Mm-hmm. She does eat pretty clean, and the only time she drinks alcohol is the time she posts pictures of alcohol.
The only question I have for you is, this was 10, 20 minutes probably, right?
Yeah, it was about 20 minutes.
20 minutes. How are you ever going to get that 20 minutes back that you lost in your life?
I know, and I just love her. I love her, so I'm fascinated by her life. So.
I mentioned it's a weird show today.
Yeah.
Who else? Who's left?
Bennett, our celebrity picker from the business shows. He produces the business shows here on WGN Radio.
Bennett, how do you feel about being a celebrity?
He's in the business?
Yeah.
Apparently
he's excited about it.
This is so perfect for today.
It really is.
This is just perfect for today.
I'm having a bad day.
Bennett, are you with me?
I'm trying to be, yeah.
No, there you are. All right, now you're on.
I hear you.
Okay, what were you talking to another show there for a second or whatever?
Yeah, you know, there was some business at that.
Maybe he's watching the Kristen Cavallari live video.
Yeah, it was on Twitter. Anyway, if you recall last year when I was part of the Wang Dang Doodle for a hot second, I was a big fan of
Oakland
the
Raiders.
Oakland Raiders.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do a throwback Thursday and pick the Oakland Raiders over the Chiefs 27-10.
That would be a huge upset.
Yeah.
Huge.
Well, no, they're like 2.5-point favorites.
That's my point. Huge. All right. Is that everybody?
That is.
That's everybody. Ooh. And that's your Wang Dang Doodle. Stand by. We'll join CLTV in a moment on 720 WGN.
I don't know.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We have a disaster. The southern border is a disaster. Hillary's a disaster.
Common Core has to be ended. It's a disaster.
It is a disaster.
Justice Roberts is a disaster.
Obamacare is a disaster.
Obamacare, it's been a disaster. Unless you get hit by a truck, you can't even use it. So Obamacare is a disaster. The total disaster. It's a catastrophe.
Rand Paul, you have to understand, is a disaster. The schools are a disaster. The hospitals and education is a disaster. This trade pact is a disaster.
The trade deal was a disaster. What a disaster. The Veterans Administration is.
VA is a disaster.
Iraq was a disaster. Yemen was a total victory. And then, like, 3 months later, it was like a disaster.
Well, we planned on having Keith Olbermann on, but his head just exploded. The only guy I know in America who's more aggravated, annoyed, angry than me about this is Keith Olbermann. And I thought the other day, I thought, boy, wouldn't it be great if we could have a daily look back at how the hell this happened and how it continues to happen. And we do. Because Keith Olbermann posts almost every day video podcast of what's going on and how his head may explode again at any time. He joins us now to talk about his new book, Trump is Effing Crazy. This is not a joke. Good morning, Mr. Olbermann.
Cochran, how are you?
Doing fine. Doing fine. I share your pain. I just wish others did it at our level.
Well, yeah, this is the reason that that this whole thing hasn't imploded yet. I think it will. I have no idea on timing. I think we will get out of this. I think we will get out of this, if not in one piece, then in repairable 2 or 3 pieces. But to some degree, this continues because most people who see what we see are unwilling or prevented by their employers from saying anything about it. And that's a real problem because it's like, if we had been, I wonder if we had been invaded by another country that put its puppet on the throne here and did the sort of thing this guy has done, if the media would go, well, there's 2 sides about how we were invaded by
Spain. Right, right.
And the Spanish culture is really very good. We're joined now by Jeffrey El Lordo. It's the end of the world. Now to say some things about how positive the end of the world is. CNN by.
Right. Why are we looking for balance and decency when the guy running the country has none.
Yeah.
Why is this not a 911 situation for Congress? Why is this not the number one? The only, to me, and I'm not being flip here. This is more important than nuclear war threats from North Korea, because this is happening. This is happening right now.
Yes.
Every second of every day.
Yes. Yes. The issue is, even, and this is, I think this is not universally true, and it becomes less true every day, thank goodness. But even a lot of Democratic legislators are still trying to leverage this. There are still large amounts of time on this topic that are being devoted to discussing how do we best position ourselves for the 2018 midterms. And the answer, of course, to that is, let's make sure the country has not been destroyed
exactly
for the 2018 midterms. You're going to deal with these policies regardless of what happened, even if we get this absolutely perfect storm of truth in which the entire election is revealed to have been totally influenced by the Russians. We're still going to have Republicans in charge of the White House, presumably through 2020. There are other outcomes that could happen, but they're so remote as to not really be worth discussing. These policies are going to be in effect. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about imminent, constant danger from a guy who tweeted this morning that you can't take, essentially implied that you cannot take the charges that he colluded with Russia. He and the Republicans colluded with Russia. You have to dismiss them as ridiculous, because instead you should believe that the Democrats and the FBI colluded with Russia. I mean, this is an unending supply of information. If it were happening on another planet, we could all sit around and just eat our popcorn and enjoy it. But as you say, it's happening right now. And the number of people in politics and in media who are still thinking, no, we could still get some of those Trump voters if we put on Hugh Hewitt on the weekend. Hugh Hewitt on the weekend. They'll all like us. And they're the guys who are making media decisions as if this was 1990. It's like, no, I'm sorry. Look at the landscape. You have two sets of media, two sets of Americans, and they do not interact. There is no middle ground at the moment.
I thought
to address that, but right now let's address the first problem. Let's address the part of the country that's on fire, the White House, and let's deal with that first.
Yeah, that's what it is. The house is on fire, and they're going, we should probably call the fire department. But
let's get a guy in here to talk about the value of redecorating the White House with flame.
right. It's Trump is effing crazy. This is not a joke. It's Keith Olbermann's new book. And the frightening thing about this is you go through, because I really, the narrative you chose here, where you go through and you lay out what you've talked about every day, I think is really important. I'm not being flip here at all. I think it's really important because we're so numb to this. What I was talking to Chuck Todd about this morning. We're so numb to this. You go, it's Trump. You can't. Yeah, it's Trump. Mm-hmm. This. As long as he is defiling the White House, you can't, it's Trump until he's gone.
I did the audio book for this, which is, by the way, 16 hours long. If you traveled to the moon, you'd only listen to it twice on the way out. The audio book, it took like a week to record it in the 3-hour sessions, and I have to say, I'm reading this, and I had edited the book as well as now a couple of weeks later or months later doing the audiobook. And even under those conditions, having originally written them, done them as commentaries, adapted them for the book, edited the book, and now sitting in front of the microphone at the end of September, beginning of this month, half of the stuff I had forgotten about.
Right.
Because it is Mickey Mouse in Fantasia. It is true. The buckets keep coming. The brooms carrying the buckets keep coming, and we don't know how to turn it off, because there is one thing we must credit Trump for, which is he is indefatigable. And the idea that he can put out what they would call in submarine circles chaff, where he could put out these deflective things constantly, 4 and 5 different controversies a day to keep people on their heels and always going to the newest thing, that's his skill. And in business and in television, that's a great thing to do. In politics, it can lead to the end of the country, or the world.
Andrea's here. Say hi to Keith Olbermann.
Keith, monologues, I love them. They're so well detailed, and the best part, they're backed up. These are actual quotes from the president, not made up.
How dare you use his words?
Right. I loved anybody else would be fired by now, and could Trump pass a sanity test, where you talk about the Abraham Lincoln quote. Does he really believe what he says as truth?
Well, I think truth is just another option for him. I don't know. Having dealt with him directly, as I used to live in a building that had his name on it, his company managed, and I dealt with him, and I thought the guy I was dealing with, who at worst you could describe as kind of an Eddie Haskell, I thought that was legit, and the racist was an act, and the lunatic was an act. And then it became clear to me that both of these things are probably true. There are multiple personalities going on inside this guy, and I don't know. It could very well be, it could be head injury from playing high school football. It could be something more serious. It could be something from the beginning. I think he believes that whatever he wants to have exist in the world is the truth. I think that's the origination point. He watches Fox and Friends because it validates his point of view and it gives him new material to work with every day. But what does believe mean? If you have decided that the world is a function of your existence, everything that you say it is going to be what it is to you. So, of course, he believes everything. And if he doesn't believe it being factually true, he believes that it's he can convince you that it's factually true. And that's his entire goal, because that gets you to support him. Thus, you like him. Thus, you applaud him. Thus, whatever gigantic hole there is in his needs and personality is filled by the applause.
Yeah. And the Six Flags between his ears, all the rides are broken. It's Trump is effing crazy. Get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose the first one. Check out the video podcast in the Post. Follow him on Twitter. I know you got to jump to another call, but thanks for doing this. And I look forward to talking to you again, man.
My pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
See ya. That's Keith Olbermann.
These monologues
are
really good.
And again, it's what we talked about. It's what you just said.
Right.
He has words. He has the best words. Mm-hmm. These are his words. These are his words.
The best
words. I saw a review of the book. And in the review, they said, Trump haters will love this book. Trump lovers will never read it. The people that need to read this are Trump lovers. People that continue to make excuses for him. People that continue to say, yeah, but.
Yeah. It's very well written, too.
Because you can take all of Keith's opinions out of this, and you can see a diary of what's gone on since the fall of last year. Because he starts in September, just a couple months before the election, and takes it through now. September through now turned into 500 pages of this disaster. Trump is effing crazy. Keith Olbermann. Break. We're back in a moment. 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show continues 9:25. The Chancellor for the U of I, Robert Jones, joins us in a few minutes. What's happening today?
They are building they're breaking ground today, making the announcement about a huge partnership between the University of Illinois, the Urbana-Champaign campus, the Chicago campus, and that parcel of land off Roosevelt and Clark. They're going to develop it. It would be a $151 million renovation of that area, Steve, with classrooms, classes, stores, all kinds of great developments that are going to be out that way, and thousands of new jobs for Chicago, too.
And then Shireen Sheritz Zeta, he hopes, president and CEO of LUMAR, Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events Commissioner, Mark Kelly, all about the special Halloween nighttime parade happening downtown Saturday night. Did you know about Arts in the Dark, that whole thing?
Yeah. In fact, I think we might be doing that for weekend break for the WGN TV weekend news this weekend as well. For
so you're covering
segment.
It at night?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we do is in the morning, because we have the live shots, they stage it for us a little bit earlier. So we always interview the organizer and what the event is. And so we kind of do a little preview in the mornings before the event happens.
It's not fake news then, is it?
Nope.
Okay, just checking.
Mm-mm.
The Starbucks people have announced that there's going to be a new zombie Frappuccino.
just in time for Halloween.
Like a caramel apple taste.
Yeah, and I've sort of tired of all these special flavors without getting involved. So I'm suggesting some new ones, and we only have 30 minutes left in the show. But if you have a Starbucks flavor you'd like to throw in, I'd certainly like to hear it. I mentioned earlier Trubisky tea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hopeful brew for the future, and it comes in a juice box.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Weinstein Whip, a hideous combination of high calories, obnoxious taste, and it comes in a huge, big, fat, ugly cup. Big Orange Liar, it's old, nasty, and it's black coffee. It's not even orange. And then texture 847, Trumpkin, or from the 847, Trumpkin Latte. An empty Christmas cup with an orange lid.
I like the name, though, Trumpkin Latte.
So where are yours? Send us your flavors.
How about, like, diesel?
What would it have?
Oh. Diesel.
Diesel fuel?
How about, like...
Well, you know, sometimes people say
looking for
coffee
a theme.
Sounds like, you know, about, it tastes like diesel.
How about, here's one for you, a Cubby Macchiato, and it has seven shots.
So?
Literally, because we have
pretty
seven.
Good.
So it's like that's seven shots of espresso.
That's pretty good, yeah. It's pretty good. Yeah, it's a little more positive than I was going for, but it's pretty good. It's 9:28. We'll take a break, come back, and get you the big story in just a moment. What's your big story this time?
Well, ahead of the U of I chancellor, we're going to give you a few more details about this new economic boom to the Chicago area and the South Loop.
All right, fine. And Governor Rauner is scheduled to appear on tomorrow's show. But then again, a lot of people are. 9:28 on CLTV and 720 WGN. Details on Arts in the Dark in just a second, but we want to say hi to Robert Jones, Chancellor, U of I. Got a big day today. Good morning, Chancellor. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Are you on the scene now?
I am on the scene. I arrived here about 15 minutes ago.
Let's back up for just a second before we talk about the Illinois Innovation Network. Where did you... Pardon me, I'm all choked up. Where did you work prior to coming to the U of I?
Prior to coming to U of I spent almost 4 years as the president of the State University of New York at Albany.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And before that, I spent 34 and a half years as a faculty member and senior administrator at the University of Minnesota.
So Obviously, Chancellor, you can't hold a job.
I was
just 34 years in one spot.
I thought you were going to say he's following you.
I held on for 34 and a half years, but then I failed.
The Chancellor's job at the U of I is a huge responsibility. And in a state with economic challenges, any good news is great news. And this is certainly great news. So tell people what's going to happen today.
Well, what's happening today is the big launch and the big announcement of the DPI, Discovery Partners Institute, which is this big idea of how do you bring all of the higher education, particularly the research universities and assets together in partnership with the business community to drive innovation and discovery and innovation and provide world-class educational experiences that are going to prepare students to not only be well-educated, but to have the opportunity to graduate and then stay in this region to help drive innovation and economic vitality.
Chancellor,
we anticipate that this partnership is going to drive some world-class innovation in ways that are unprecedented here in this state, which is critically important at this point in our history.
Chancellor, this is such a win-win for both the university and the city of Chicago, because I know the university for many years has been looking for some sort of area in which to bring more classes and ties to the U of I. And this parcel of land is perfect because it's been dormant for so long. It's going to literally revitalize it to the point of where this could become another neighborhood in Chicago.
You're absolutely right. And one of the conversations I had with President Colleen when I was being recruited for this job, I said, unless you are going to be supportive of me helping to advance a physical presence, particularly for the Urbana-Champaign campus in the city of Chicago, then you're probably hiring the wrong guy. Because, you know, we're the land-grant university. We were founded 150 years ago with the sole mission of serving the people. And last time I checked, the majority of the people in this state are in this fine city. So this is very much
it's a big deal.
part of my vision, and I tell you, I could not be more excited about this opportunity.
And Northwestern University and the University of Chicago have already signed on, and you could have other campuses join as well. Now, I know you're doing a press conference here shortly, and I know the mayor and the governor will both be there. So this might be a good time for you to play mediator and get those two together and tell them to start getting along. If not, I'll take it from there.
Okay, I think I'm going to leave that one up to you.
Chancellor, congratulations on the job and a big job ahead, and congratulations on today.
Can I just make one other comment?
Nope, I'm sorry. Of course you can, absolutely.
I'd also just like to say that part of this big idea is something called the Illinois Innovation, the Illinois Innovation Network. And so at 1:30, you may be aware that we're going to be announcing the first node as a part of the outgrowth of the DPI. The DPI is kind of going to be the hub, and then there are going to be these nodes all over the state.
Sort of like spinoffs.
Like what?
Like a spinoff kind of thing.
Well, yeah, like a hub, and then the spokes coming out from the hub.
Yeah.
One of the first nodes in this strategy will be announced at 1:30 this afternoon at the Polsky Center, the partnership between University of Chicago and University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're going to be announcing a deep partnership around advanced analytics, advanced materials, and public engagement. I'm very big on public engagement, and I feel particularly land-grant university like Illinois has a responsibility for solving complex problems, not only advancing innovation, but to solve complex problems in community. So we're very excited to be physically located on the Third Street project as well.
That's great.
And the folks downstate can just take a breath and understand that this is good for the whole state.
Yes.
And you know, and bringing us all together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. This is good for everyone across this entire state, and that's what's so excited about it.
Chancellor, thanks again.
My great pleasure.
All right, all the best. That's Chancellor Robert Jones, ILL.
That's great. INI.
Oh, Mary dropped a ball. Vanderbilt, where are you on the INI?
Blowing my nose.
Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry. You're not feeling good?
No, I just had a sneezing attack earlier.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, that was your chancellor.
Yeah.
I
he's great.
I'm trying to get you both refunds on your tuition just for all the promotion you do for the university.
Ooh, that would be nice.
Yeah. Let's segue into some more good news. This is about some happenings coming up. And joining us to talk about Luma 8's Arts in the Dark celebration, which is coming up this weekend. You think you're going to shoot this for Channel 9?
Yeah, we're going to be covering this Saturday morning for Weekend Break. That's Anna Balaval's Round Town segment, feature segment on the morning news, Saturday morning.
Shireen Shariah Zeta. I almost called Julia last time. Was that close?
My first name was. My last name, people feel that curiosity helps them, even though it's a little bit different, but it's Shariotsity. So
Shariotsity,
that might be
that's cool.
Helpful.
I spent over an hour trying to get it down. Yeah.
You should have
give it to me again.
Texted. Shariotsity.
Shariotsity.
So if you look at it when you say it.
Nah, that's not going to help me. Shireen Shariotsity, President and CEO of Luma 8 and the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events Commissioner Mark Kelly. Welcome both of you back to the show. How are you, Mark?
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to see you. All right. First off, tell me what Luma 8 is.
So Luma 8 is a new independent not-for-profit. The mission is to really create positive conversations about Chicago using unique events like Arts in the Dark, so this is our first big kickoff, working very closely with DCAES, the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, and Choose Chicago to just help elevate the cultural life of the city, really delight the citizens here, and ultimately bring visitors and economic impact.
And Mark, are you going to be in charge of body painting everyone so they glow? What's happening?
That's just the beginning. This is going to be a parade like no parade Chicago has ever seen.
How do we make everybody light up?
Well, the fire breathers are coming. The fire spinners are coming. Captain Nemo's flying fire organ is going to be showing up. So don't worry about illumination. It's going to be everywhere in the
It sounds like just visually. It's going to
be flammable.
Visually, it sounds like it's going to be spectacular.
Yeah. We have such great parades in this city, and it's high time that we have a Halloween parade.
You know what's funny is we were talking about this a week ago. I miss Venetian Night. I thought Venetian Night was so cool. Yeah. And, you know, doing a post-sunset
cool events like this, I think, are great.
I think that's what makes part of what makes this special is the idea that it's in the evening and it's Halloween. It's also celebrated the week before Halloween, so we don't interfere with, you know, families trick-or-treating and that kind of thing.
But this has turned into such a holiday for grown-ups. This is actually for the whole family.
Everyone loves Halloween. Yeah. I'm shocked at how many people say it's their favorite holiday.
It is. Yeah. It's so much fun. And then there's a big party at the Bean afterwards. It's the Haunted House party.
So Maggie Daly, Chicago Park District, will be having family fun activities and trick-or-treating.
All day long?
After the parade. Okay. And then for the adults and more, we're going to have a house party, dance party in front of the Bean. Going from 7:30 till 9 p.m. with DJ Roy Davis and the Five Star Boogie Dancers.
Oh, and yeah. Here's the interesting thing. Some lucky person's going to be able to bring home the Bean if they can fit it in their car.
If they can. But yeah, they can get Blackhawks prizes.
Look at Mark's going, hey, man, don't get me into a meeting I don't need to have.
You know, you have great partnerships, too. Looking Glass, Broadway in Chicago, and the Blackhawks.
I know. They've all been amazing. The Blackhawks are hosting a pre-parade celebration at Buckingham Fountain, and I'm dying to see this myself. They have commissioned a mural that combines hockey, the arts, and Halloween.
Ooh,
and
cool.
You can take pictures in front of it, and they have prizes for, you know, selfies and social media and all of that, with music and fun. And that kicks off at 4 and goes to 5:45. And then the highlight of the day, obviously, is the parade. That
looks like a blast.
Yeah.
You guys getting along okay since you have to work together on this? Mark seems like
a
decent guy.
We're good buddies.
Yeah, he's pretty easy to work with. You can tell he's not very laid back. That's just, I wish he would just.
Wound, tired, and a drum, aren't you?
Yeah.
Got it.
What are your costumes? I assume you guys are dressing up?
So everyone on my team is going as biker gang.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right.
Comfortable, cool, and maybe you can wear some of the things afterwards, but.
The Shariotsity gang?
It's possible the Shariotsity gang will be doing that. The Luma 8 gang, for sure.
Okay. How about you, Mark?
I will be coming, how would you describe it, Shireen? The ringmaster.
Yeah.
I'm bringing together, so to help your listeners imagine what's going to happen. First of all, the reason we're doing this is the parade for the creative spirits of Chicago and for the cultural organization. So everyone has their parades, but we don't. So this is our parade, and then this parade has to be so different than the traditional Chicago parade. I would argue Chicago parades are not artful. They're formulaic. There's too many waving politicians and beauty queens.
Right.
But parading is an art form. And boy, are the cultural organizations of this city going to be bringing it to this evening procession. Halloween is the artist's holiday. We've just never declared it. And so we have everything from the Art Institute bringing out their armor from their new medieval armor show to we have about 8 different dance companies. We have the South Shore Drill Team.
I'm going to be riding the lions in front of the Art Institute.
That'll be fun.
What time? What time does it start?
It's the parade starts. The pre-parade activities start on Columbus at 4:30.
Four.
And then the parade itself starts just after 6. Columbus during the day for parades is a rather cavernous, unfriendly space, but at night, softly illuminated with lights, it's a magical setting.
And don't forget, kids, dark at 6 o'clock now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this
early
works out.
Exactly, yeah.
Arts in the Dark, hashtag Arts in the Dark and artsinthedark.org. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you coming in.
We'll see you out there, Steve, in your costume, or do you believe that every day
you
is a costume?
You won't know me.
Oh.
Willie Geist next before we turn it over to Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. It's our friend Willie Geist, live from New York with Dale Earnhardt Jr., his guest on Sunday today. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. We got Jr., so he's got a couple more races left, and then he's hanging them up, retiring. So this is our first foray into stock car racing, but we figure if you're going to go in, go right to the top. So we got Dale Jr. on Sunday. Interesting conversation. Even if you're not a fan, you remember his dad died at Daytona in 2001.
Sure.
And he goes pretty deep on it. His publicist came up to me after and said, I've never heard Jr. talk that much about his dad. So he's kind of feeling the end of the run here, and I think he's more reflective and opening up a little bit. So good conversation. I think you'll like it.
Give yourself some credit, my friend. You're a great interviewer, and people get comfortable. They open up to you.
Well, you know, you try to like you do, you try to strip away some of the artifice of the interview and just sit there and talk to somebody. It's better than, okay, 3, 2, 1, lights, camera, action. We're just talking, and incidentally, there are cameras here. That always works better.
By the way, Willie is debuting his new show. This is the pilot for it. It's race car drivers in cars with Willie going holy crap fast on the way to getting some coffee. It's a little wordy. They're trying to pare it down.
So is Seinfeld, too, though, let's be honest. That, by the way, that's literally true. He took me for a ride. They wouldn't let us get in a stock car. We were at Talladega, the famous racetrack down in Alabama. And they wouldn't let us get in a stock car because there's no shotgun. There's no safety. There's nowhere to sit. So they found he's a Chevy guy. So they went to the Chevy dealership and got this $150,000 Corvette that has 750 horsepower or something obscene like that. And he'd never driven it before, so we get him pit road. He hops behind the wheel. I get in shotgun. He's never driven it before. The guy from the dealership gives him a quick little tutorial, and he just hits the gas out of pit road. And we went on those turns that are banked 33 degrees. He goes right up on the wall at 180 miles an hour.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, you're feeling the G's for one thing. Your children's sweet faces are. This is going to be a hard one to explain at the funeral. What was he doing again?
Yeah, again.
What was Junior doing? So we did about four laps, and I said, I think I got it. Are you good? He started laughing. He said, dude, I got to tell you, that's the fastest I've ever gone in a streetcar. The fastest.
Is that right? He said that.
Been in a streetcar, in a non-racing car, as fast as he'd ever been in his life.
How great that he'd experiment with your life. What a good friend.
I know. I don't know. I guess you trust him. I guess I trust him. He'd never driven the car. How did he know the wheels were going to hold around those turns?
Exactly.
These are questions I asked myself later as I reflected on.
And change your underpants.
Exactly.
It's a great Willie, guys. I know you got to run, but Sunday today, watching with Dale Earnhardt Jr. Thanks, buddy.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Thanks. Bill and Wendy next.